Life comes at you fast. Most of it is just smoke and mirrors. We're here to clear the air. Whether it's the can't make this up moments or the hard truths hitting our streets and our state, we're finding the signal in all that noise. No spin, no nonsense, just the facts, the fallout, and a little bit of humor. Grab your coffee. It's time for the Morning Drip on WRTO.FM, Radio Free Georgia.
Hey, welcome and good morning. This is the Morning Drip for March 26, 2026. It is a Thursday. I am your humble host, Donovan. Glad you could join us this morning. We are barreling to the end of the week, which it's always nice to see a Friday, right? Love a Friday, love a Saturday. I love a weekend, especially a weekend when I don't have to do anything. Unfortunately, this weekend is not one of those weekends, as I mentioned yesterday. Anyway, like I said, it is Thursday, March 26, 2026. It's currently 59 degrees down here in South Central Georgia and Tifton and Tift County. We're looking at a high of 84 today, so it's going to get up there. We're going to have overcast skies this morning, partly cloudy skies in the afternoon, and tonight we'll have partly cloudy skies in the evening with clear skies overnight. Friday will be 87. Saturday, not entirely sure what's going on. Guess we got another cold front coming through, but the high is only going to be 70, but the low is only going to be 54. Sunday, I'll have a low of 48 with a high of 74, and then we start getting back into the 80s beginning next week. So that's your Thursday morning weather report from yours truly right here on the Morning Drip on WRTO.FM, Radio Free, Georgia. All right, let's kick this show off. So, you know, we've been talking about, oh, by the way, before I get started, the call-in or text line is 229-668-4911. Again, 229-668-4911. Send me a text or you can give me a call if you want to have a conversation about any and everything that we're going to talk about today. Or if you just want to bring something to my attention, that works too. Okay, so we've been talking about the war in Iran. I'm not going to call it a military exercise. I'm not going to call it an excursion or anything like that. I'm going to call it exactly what it is. It's a war. It is a war that one man has declared, the president of the United States, on another sovereign nation. Now, I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty and all the little bits and bites and pieces of why we shouldn't have, or if you're one of those that's like, yeah, we should have, et cetera, et cetera. We're here, and it's causing a lot of damn issues. And of course, one of the biggest issues, as I've already talked about, is the price of oil, which then translates into higher gas prices, higher diesel fuel prices. And of course, that's going to get passed on to the consumer, especially as it connects with shipping costs. And so the Postal Service announced that they are going to impose their first ever fuel surcharge on packages. First time ever. The USPS has never, as far as I know, implemented a fuel surcharge, because the article says that right here. For the first time in its history, the USPS will implement a fuel surcharge. It is specifically targeted at package deliveries. So what is this charge going to be? 8%. 8% fee will be added to the cost of shipping. This surcharge is scheduled to begin on April 26, 2026, and is currently slated to be phased out January 17, 2027. The agency aims, what they're trying to do is to, of course, offset the surging cost of fuel and transportation to stabilize its long-term finances. As we've said before, the USPS is one of those pseudo-government agencies that's supposed to be operated independently, supposed to have autonomy. But, and I forget when this was, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, honestly, I can't remember. But the federal government imposed restrictions on the USPS that they need, if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, send me a text or email, show@morningdrip.show. That they had to fund 75 years in the future basically for the next 75 years, they had to fund retirement. So I think that's what's got them. That's what started the whole avalanche of them being in financial straits. Again, if you've got more pertinent information than what I'm providing and you think I'm wrong and you want to, you know, correct the record, set it straight, fine. I'd love to hear from you. So this is, of course, going to apply. The 8% surcharge is going to apply to packages such as Priority Mail, Ground Advantage, and other parcel services. The fee will not apply to standard letter mail like first class stamps, protecting everyday mail users from the price hike. Even though other reports over the last couple of weeks has said that the Postmaster General has come out and said, look, he's requested to be allowed to raise postage up to like 95 cents a stamp, almost a buck. So think about that. If he got his way, it would cost you $1 to send a letter, a physical letter in the mail. How many of us actually, I mean, any time that I have the option of, let's say, receiving a bill or some type of notification, if I have an option of getting a physical copy or send it to me electronically via email, send it to one of my email addresses, 100% I'm always going to go for the electronic. Because quite frankly, if I need to keep a copy of what's being sent to me and it's sent to me as a physical piece of paper, I scan it in, store it on my network attached storage that I have on my home network, which is backed up to the cloud, and then I shred that piece of paper. So just send it to me via email, right? You're going to send it to me as a PDF, more than likely. I'll just download that, store it on my NAS, and be done with it. You don't have to worry about cutting down an entire forest to be able to send me notifications. The first thing that comes to mind is homeowner's insurance. I just recently got my renewed homeowner's insurance packet, and I don't know why they sent it to me in physical form, because I have told them time and time again, this is one of the disadvantages of this, because it seems like the settings don't stick sometimes. And I'm an IT professional of 35, 36 plus years, and I can't even figure out why this happens. But when you get your homeowner's insurance packet that's got all the declarations and everything, oh my God, that thing's like 25 or 30 pages, but I can go online and download the entire thing as a PDF. So you can imagine what I did with that entire 25 or 30 page thing that I got from my insurance company. It went in the shredder. So I understand the USPS, and I like the United States Postal Service. It serves a very important function, but I do understand why they could be having financial difficulties, because just like I said, don't send me a letter, send me an email. And they, up until recently, they were the preferred shipping partner for Amazon, especially in this area. But now we actually have an Amazon, I forget what they're called, but basically it's a shipping facility in Valdosta, Georgia. You've probably noticed, especially if you're in South Georgia, in the Tifton, Valdosta, Albany area, especially in Tifton, we've started getting packages in these, and it's sad. I wish they would put something on the vans. They're either white, unmarked vans, that's not scary, or they have a logo on them from Enterprise, so apparently the vans are rented. One I actually saw the other day had a sign on the side that said delivery person. But there's no logo on it whatsoever that says that it is associated with Amazon. I think they need to fix that. And I don't know, you know, are they just waiting to see if they're going to make it before they do that? Is that on the list of things to do? You know, because I don't like unmarked white vans, or honestly, any unmarked utility type vehicle running around in my neighborhood. It's a bit off-putting. So what do you think, though, about this 8% surcharge? Is that too much? Is it not enough? Do you think that they should figure out a different way of compensating or accounting for the increased shipping or fuel costs? I mean, one thing that would definitely help this is if the United States could actually end this war in Iran, let's get things back to normal, a little bit of stabilization, you know? And I can tell you this, as much as I think the USPS is still important, if I had to grade them on a scale of 1 to 10 on how poignant, not poignant, what's the term I'm looking for? How efficient they are, how on time they are, that kind of stuff. I'd have to probably give them about a 6, maybe a 6, might even be a 5. Because the number of times I had a package that was supposed to have been delivered Monday, okay? And I was like, that's great. I'll get it Monday. Well, Monday came and went. And I'm one of these that I will sit there and I will track the entire journey of a package. And so the package left Texas, wound up going to Illinois, then got hung up where all I got was a notification that said it was en route to South Carolina. And then all day Tuesday, it never said anything until late Tuesday night. And it said that it was had arrived in Jacksonville, I guess around 7:22, 8:22, somewhere like that. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, good. I'm probably going to get it yesterday, Wednesday. Nope. All day yesterday. The last update was it had arrived in Jacksonville. First thing I do, I check it this morning. Still says it has arrived in Jacksonville. Fortunately, a little while later, maybe about a half an hour later, I get a notification via email that it is now out for delivery. So from the time I checked it first thing this morning to about a half hour later, the tracking information had updated from it being in Jacksonville to it being in Tifton. It arrived in Tifton at like 6:32 and was on the truck out for delivery at like 6:33. So I don't know exactly what's going on there, but I can tell you, and look, when there's bad weather, I'm not complaining about that. I completely understand that. There's extenuating circumstances when it comes to bad weather. You know, if my package gets delayed a couple of days because of bad weather, look, I know the whole motto about neither rain, no sleet, no snow, et cetera, et cetera. I get that. But at the same time, I don't want anybody to put their lives in jeopardy to get me my package, you know? Anyway, what do you think, though, about this 8% surcharge? I know none of us are going to be happy, but honestly, I guess I need to ask the other question is, how many packages do you actually ship out yourself via USPS, and how many packages do you get coming in via USPS? And then, you know, the other question that I have, not necessarily for you, but let's just throw it out in the universe, is packages that are still being shipped via USPS from Amazon, are they going to have to start paying that 8% surcharge, or do they have some kind of special deal? I don't know. Let me know your thoughts. Again, that call in and text line is 229-668-4911. It's one number for both, 229-668-4911. Or you can email the show. That email address is show@morningdrip.show. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back.
Back to the Morning Drip, because shouting at the TV just isn't interactive enough. Quit yelling at the screen and start telling us. Call or text 229-668-4911. That's one number for everything. Let's do this.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Drip for Thursday. It is March 26, 2026. Our call in and text number is 229-668-4911. Email address is show@morningdrip.show. So there's been a court case making its way through the system. Cox Communications Incorporated versus Sony Music Entertainment. And this kind of hits home for me, considering that I worked for and ran CityNet I was a network manager there from 1999 to about 2003, superintendent for about a year, then director/GM from 04 to 09 when it was sold to Plant, and then I was still the GM until I left in 2012. So, cable broadband company, this kind of hit home for me. So on Wednesday, yesterday, March 25th, the Supreme Court issued a unanimous now, 9-0 ruling in this Cox Communications Incorporated versus Sony Music Entertainment court case. It's a landmark case with significant implications for the broadband industry and internet freedom. So what happened? Well, for some context, Sony was basically suing Cox, I think, because they felt like that they should bear some responsibility for their own users downloading, essentially stealing copyrighted music. So the Supreme Court actually overturned a lower court's decision that would have held Cox Communications liable for $1 billion in damages for failing to disconnect users suspected of music piracy. Remember back in the day, Napster? This isn't that, but that's what started all this mess. The court ruled that an internet service provider cannot be held liable for copyright infringement by its users simply because it provides internet access and has, quote, knowledge that some users may be pirating material. Justice Clarence Thomas, writing for the majority, stated that an ISP is only liable if it intended for its service to be used for infringement, which is typically proven in two ways. Inducement, which is actively encouraging or promoting piracy, and tailoring, designing the service specifically for illegal use with no substantial lawful use. So the outcome is because Cox provides general internet access, which is what pretty much, I mean, all ISPs do. They're just a conduit to the World Wide Web and all these other services, and used for millions of legal purposes. And Cox had policies to discourage piracy, such as sending warnings, which pretty much every ISP does. The court found it did not meet the criteria for contributory infringement, which is something I have never heard of before, but I get it. So why is this case so important? I mean, I can think of 100 reasons probably, but preventing mass evictions, Cox and several tech advocacy groups, including the ACLU, argued that if the original verdict stood, ISPs would be forced to terminate the internet access of entire households, hospitals, or businesses based on a single accusation of piracy to avoid massive lawsuits. I mean, they fall up under Section 230 anyway. That's the reason why Section 230 of the Telecommunications Act was put in, is so that it could foster, at the time, this new technology and this new communication medium and all of that, and allow businesses to get up and go, and new ISPs to form, and, you know, capitalism, yo. Cox described the ruling as a decisive victory that ensures ISPs are not legally required to act as private copyright police. See, I've had situations like that. I've got a client, a business client, of course, because all my clients are businesses, where they got a notice that some copyrighted material had been downloaded over their internet connection. And what it turned out to be was that the public Wi-Fi was not locked down well enough. So whether they intended to do it, or maybe they had a torrent running on their laptop, and then when they got there, they're, you know, waiting on whatever, because I'm not going to give away what customer it was, what client it was, but they were sitting there in a waiting room or whatever with their laptop, and then it just fired back up. I don't know, but let me guarantee you that once we got that, I went in and implemented some very draconian rules when it came to the public side of the Wi-Fi. In most cases, like in your home network, you have what's called a firewall/router. A lot of folks, they get a modem, or they get a combination modem Wi-Fi router from their ISP. And then that is what protects you from the wild web, if you will. And it blocks a lot of incoming stuff, but it allows you to go out. Like if you want to visit a website, you know, you go out to that website, and then that router is like, okay, well, this information coming back was requested by somebody internally, so I'm going to allow it to come in. That's the way it normally works. You normally don't block outbound traffic. But in this particular instance, I locked that thing down tighter than a tick and only allowed certain outbound ports, web access, email access, that kind of stuff, which killed all of the torrenting ports. So, yeah, if the original verdict had been left standing, then clients like that of mine could have found that suddenly they didn't have internet access, which I think in itself would be very draconian. Of course, the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, you know, that's the organization that that sued the crap out of everybody back during the Napster days. Well, they expressed disappointment, stating that the decision, quote, discards a jury's determination that Cox knowingly facilitated theft. They believe this makes it much harder for creators to protect their work in the digital age. And while the vote was 9-0, Justice Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote a separate concurring opinion. They agreed that Cox was not liable in this specific case, but criticized the majority for, quote, unnecessarily limiting, end quote, the legal definitions of how other companies might be held responsible for aiding and abetting copyright theft in the future. Okay, those ladies may be my part of the Supreme Court because our values somewhat align, but I don't agree with them on this one. I just don't. I do not. I don't think any ISP should be liable for what, I mean, again, that's Section 230. If you run a forum back in the day of the old forum sites, the whole point of Section 230 is that me as a forum maintainer, as a forum admin, I'm the buck stops here. If someone decides to start sharing information in a forum about how to, I don't know, remove the encryption on DVDs back in the day or stuff like that, I cannot be held liable for that. Now, I might should make a good effort to go in and look at that and go, okay, this goes against our terms of service, depending on how the terms of service happens to be written. And then, you know, I should remove that. But then you get yourself in a quandary where if you start to police the content, that almost sets a legal precedent that, okay, you know that people are doing stuff on your site that they shouldn't be doing. And you've taken steps. So if you let it continue, then you should be liable. You have to be very, very careful in this kind of stuff. It's unfortunate, but it's true. I, for one, think this is great. I kind of have a negative view of the music industry as a whole anyway. They're very adversarial. They're very, I don't know, just look back over the last 30, 40 years and the number of artists that have BS deals with music companies and things of that nature. I mean, I'm all for people getting paid for their works. I'm all for people being able to protect their works. You know, I should not be able to take a Taylor Swift song and just play it for everybody without having to compensate the artist. It's the reason why we pay fees whenever, you know, radio stations pay fees, online radio stations pay fees. That's the reason why you have companies like Live 365, where you pay a monthly fee and they cover those costs for you. It's all built in. I think those costs are exorbitant, but because they treat what's called web radio back in the day, but online radio stations, they treat them unfairly and charge them a hell of a lot more. But I guess some could argue that they're accessible by a wider audience than, say, traditional radio that can only go so far, 100,000 watt, massive tower, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know. What do you think? You think this was the right decision by the Supreme Court? It's wild that it was unanimous, 9-0. You don't see that very often here lately. Let me know your thoughts. 229-668-4911. Drop me a text, give me a call, or email show@morningdrip.show. Going to take another little quick break, and then we'll be back.
Your coffee is weak. Your commute is long. Your boss is, well, you know. It's time to wake up. Join the revolution of the caffeine addicted. The Morning Drip. Every morning on WRTO.FM. It's not just a show. It's your daily jolt of reality. Warning. May cause sudden outburst of free thought. More caffeine, more conversation. This is The Morning Drip. Save this in your phone, 229-668-4911. That's your direct line for calls and texts. Now,
back to the mess.
Hey, welcome back and good morning. This is the Morning Drip for Thursday, March 26, 2026, and I am your humble host, Donovan. So let's talk about airports. Small airports could close. And apparently there's going to be a, quote, clear winner in all of this. So, of course, we've got a looming federal budget crisis, which is causing some staffing shortages. TSA folks are calling out sick. They're abandoning those jobs because they're having to go find some place that they can actually make a paycheck, make some money. Because like most of Americans, they live paycheck to paycheck and they're expected to work without making any money. So I cannot fault them for this. You can weigh in on whichever side of the aisle is causing all of this issues. That's not what I'm going to talk about here, though I have my own opinions. And if you know anything about me, you're already going to know what I would say about that. But what's happening here apparently is creating what is being called the perfect storm for air travel. So we've got critical shortages. The TSA is reporting significant staffing gaps at several of the nation's busiest hubs, including Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International, LAX, and O'Hare. Increased passenger volumes, now consistently exceeding pre-pandemic records, combined with mandatory overtime, have led to a spike in TSA officer retention. And despite recent pay increases, the TSA is finding it difficult to compete with private sector wages in a tight labor market, leading to, quote, skeleton crews at many security checkpoints. And then, of course, we've got the DHS shutdown situation. The Department of Homeland Security, of course, is facing a potential funding lapse. TSA agents are considered essential and would continue to work during a shutdown. They're going to also do it without pay until the government reopens. And during previous shutdowns, the TSA callouts, also known as absences, spiked as officers struggled to cover commuting costs and childcare without a paycheck, leading to massive delays and even the closure of some security lanes. And let's mention the fact that we now have ICE agents in various airports. They're in the Atlanta airport, they're in LAX. And depending on where you go on the internet, you're going to see people touting the fact that now that ICE agents are there, the lines have gone from taking 6 hours to get through to get on your plane to 40 minutes. And that is complete and utter bullshit. That is not true. Because every time one of those posts pops up on Facebook or X or any of the social media platforms, you've got other people that will actually show you pictures of them there at the airport and say, no, TSA is just standing around with their thumbs up their butts, or they're hounding people, arresting people because illegal immigration, yo. So the deployment of ICE agents at the airports has nothing whatsoever to do with trying to make it easier for you to fly. It's not helping the TSA agents. ICE agents are not trained to do any of the things that the TSA agents are trained to do. So they're not helpful at all. In my opinion, this is potentially a test to get people accustomed to them roaming the airports for one of two reasons. One, they're going to be there permanently as a way to continue their efforts, if you will, of arresting people that they deem as illegal immigrants. Number two, it's not a far stretch to go, well, they're at the airports, now they're going to be at the polling locations come this November. And let me tell you, there is nothing more intimidating, at least in the airports, they don't have their masks on. Even though Trump is like, he's pro-mask for the, quote, safety of the ICE agents, he told them to take the mask off when they're in the airport. Mark my words, if they are deployed at polling locations across the country, they will be masked. And there is nothing more intimidating than a masked, roided up person standing there with military grade hardware all over their body while you're trying to cast a vote. I'm just saying, Call me a conspiracy theorist, a conspiracy nut. I'm just telling you, watch it. All right. So the other part of this, though, is there's an impact on Clear and PreCheck. The Wall Street Journal reports that even premium services like Clear and TSA PreChecks are seeing significantly longer wait times. New DHS mandates requiring more rigorous identity re-verification for Clear members have slowed down the process, and when combined with fewer open TSA lanes, to receive those passengers, the, quote, fast pass advantage is diminishing. Travelers are being advised to arrive at least 3 to 4 hours early for domestic flights during the upcoming spring break and Masters Week travel surges. I saw someone post that they had gotten to the airport 6 hours ahead of their flight and still missed it. So, I don't know, man. So, what could you expect if you need to fly? Well, number one, I'd say please try to avoid flying if you can. But expect fewer operational security lanes, even during peak hours. If the DHS shutdown continues, security wait times could fluctuate wildly day to day. And reduced staffing also impacts the maintenance and oversight of new CT scanners and automated screening lanes, further slowing the process. It's a terrible, terrible time in the United States to need to fly. And what I'm concerned about is the potential closure of, you know, temporarily of these smaller airports. We have two small airports down here in South Georgia that I'm aware of. I only been to one, but we have one over in Albany, Georgia, and we have one in Valdosta. The one in Valdosta is the one that I've been to multiple times because that's the one where my kids fly in and out of. And I'm concerned that, I mean, I hope this doesn't continue much further. I mean, basically it comes down to the Democrats are like, look, you want to fund TSA, let's carve this out into a separate package and let's get that approved. The Republicans seem to want to do that to an extent, but then Dear Leader is like, no, we're not going to compromise. So even if it did get up to him, he probably would veto it, which would not be a good look for him. And then I saw late yesterday or first thing this morning where the Republicans did kind of come to the table, but then the Democrats looked like they pulled a fast one and were like, yeah, but now that you've gotten here, you need to go one step further. I don't know if I agree with that or not. I mean, they feel like they have the leverage right now. I don't know that they do. I do think that they're on the right side of history when it comes to this. There's certain restrictions and mandates that need to be put on ICE agents. They need to take those masks off. They need an actual warrant signed by an actual judge to be able to enter your home or arrest people or things like that. Their power needs to be curtailed some. I think the entire department needs to be reevaluated and rejiggered. I'm not saying shut it down, but in its current form, it's too much like the Gestapo, honestly, and not a federal law enforcement agency. That's my opinion. I want the TSA agents to be able to get back to work, to get paid, and for air travel to stabilize, especially before midsummer to late summer, because, you know, my son's supposed to be coming back for good. He's relocating back to Georgia from the West Coast. And I'd like for all of this. Yes, I'm being selfish. I'd like for all of this to be resolved before then, because he's also got to get all of his crap shipped here. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. All right. I'm going to take one last quick break, and then we're going to end today's show and the show for the week with a little funny, little nostalgia, 15 things schools banned in the 80s. That's my time. That's my time to shine. Anyway, we'll be back.
Back to the show. If you're still listening and haven't called us yet, well, bless your heart. Join the Drip at 229-668-4911. That's 229-668-4911. Text us or call in. We don't care. We just want to hear from you.
Hey, welcome back to the Morning Drip. I am Donovan. It is Thursday, March 26, 2026, and we are about to get out of here. One last story. I wanted to end on something that for the week that's a little lighthearted, and it actually answers one of the questions that I had yesterday. This is an article over at thescroller.net, 15 things schools banned in the 1980s, which is, as I said yesterday, I graduated in 1988. I am a Gen Xer, so this was my decade. First thing up was long hair on boys. Many schools in the 80s saw long hair as a symbol of defiance against traditional norms, and schools argue it undermined discipline and respect for authority. And at most private schools and even some public schools, grooming standards were strictly enforced to maintain a uniform appearance. Number two answered my question. Pagers. I was talking about the bell-to-bell banning of cell phones in public schools, and I had questioned whether or not pagers had been banned in the 80s. Well, apparently, devices that allowed constant communication were feared to interrupt lessons. It's a practice that's been taken up by schools today as well, as we talked about. But yeah, pagers were actually banned. Skateboards were banned in the 80s. Many schools banned skateboarding because it was seen as a dangerous activity that could cause injuries on school property. Administrators said that they feared accidents could lead to lawsuits, so they banned skateboarding. Chewing gum. I remember this one. You could not chew gum. Gum was considered messy and disruptive, and kids constantly stuck it to furniture and floors. Yes, among other things, Rubik's cubes, extremely popular in the 80s. So they were banned oftentimes from schools because students would become distracted with them during class. Comic books. Ooh, the evil comic books. Certain comic books were restricted from 80s schools because some were believed to promote violence and inappropriate humor. Parents and administrators considered the content morally questionable, leading libraries to remove controversial comics and ban them from schools. Fast forward to the modern era, and you got nothing but Marvel and DC superhero movies, which draw their inspiration from comic books. Walkmans. Many schools ban Walkmans because students would listen to music instead of paying attention in class. Well, I mean, of course. Jeez. Hats. Most teachers in the 80s considered wearing hats disrespectful. Policies reflected longstanding traditions and classroom behavior. Teachers also reported that hats could hide student identities during instruction, so the ban reinforced discipline and effectiveness. Yo-yos. Yet another distraction during lessons and transitions. All right. Can't say I don't think I ever would have thought to carry a yo-yo, especially in high school. Cassette recorders. Why? Kids having instruments to record teachers or other kids was quite the distraction. Students frequently used cassette recorders to take music or conversations, creating distractions during lessons. Ah, we just do that on phones now, right? Oh, wait, bell-to-bell ban. Chain wallets. Okay, this one was a little weird for me. They were banned because teachers were concerned they could be used as weapons or damage property. Banned t-shirts. While there wasn't a widespread official nationwide ban on banned, B-A-N-D, t-shirts, you know, your favorite musical band, many schools did ban t-shirts that featured inappropriate rock bands or controversial imagery. These bans were particularly targeting heavy metal or punk band merch that was deemed inappropriate. Clackers. It was a toy consisting of two hard balls on a string that banged together. They were banned because they were considered a serious safety hazard. Oh, yeah, I could imagine you could hurt somebody with those. And they would be distracting. Portable cameras. The Polaroid and other types of cameras. They were often banned because students would take pictures without permission, which raised privacy and security concerns. Hell, we don't care about privacy or security nowadays, right? And finally, trading cards. Schools often banned trading cards because students became distracted by collecting, trading, and playing games during school. Teachers reported arguments or fights over rare or valuable cards, which disrupted lessons and hallways. Administrators were concerned that disputes could escalate and create an unsafe environment. You know, I can almost agree with that. Back when I was in elementary school, I had a friend of mine who brought a Merlin, if you remember what Merlin was. And he let me play with it, but then there was some kind of weird altercations that happened. I think I brought batteries, so I felt like I was entitled to use it more or something. And we basically, at recess, went outside and decided we were going to have a fight over this. And I got to tell you, I got my ass kicked. I did. I'm not such an ego-driven person that I would lie about that. I got my butt kicked. I thought I was going to be big and bad. All it took was one punch to the jaw. That was it. I was done. I was out. We later shook hands and everything was okay. So there you go. All right. Well, that's it for the Morning Drip for Thursday, March 26, 2026. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, a fantastic Friday and weekend. With the way the weather's going to be, we'll hopefully be back here on Monday around 7:30 a.m. broadcasting live on WRTO.FM, Radio Free Georgia. You take care of yourselves. If you're listening to this later on in podcast form, you can still text 229-668-4911 if you want to weigh in on anything that I've talked about in today's show or any of the previous shows this week, or you can email the show. That email address is show@morningdrip.show. So that's it. We are out. Have a great weekend. I'll see you next week. Thank you.